It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medications to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We'll spend the next half an hour together talking about a very serious problem. And the problem is doctors have overprescribed pain pills for years, but not realizing the impact. According to AARP, almost one-third of all Medicare patients, nearly 12 million people, were prescribed opioid painkillers by their physicians in 2015. That same year, 2.7 million Americans over age 50 abused painkillers, meaning that they took them for reasons or in amounts beyond what the doctor prescribed. And we all know that there is an opioid crisis and epidemic worldwide, really. And I have with me Elizabeth Dragazzi of Dragazzi and Company. She's an independent contractor pharmacy specialist. It's a really interesting field. She's also board certified in pharmacotherapist. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming in today and discussing this issue that a lot of people, I'm not sure, they know about the opioid crisis, but I wonder if they realize how it's impacting seniors.
Yes, and it's not just seniors over 65 as we visualize seniors, but it's the largest group, according to the CDC, is between the ages of 50 and 59. So these are AARP people. And then the next group over 60 is the next largest group. And there are a number of reasons why that's happened. There's been a lack of good screening tools that have been used in their doctor's appointments. Of course, we all know how short doctor's appointments can be. And if there are other diseases, serious diseases and chronic diseases that are being treated, it was just an easy, cheap, well-promoted way to deal quickly with pain. And unfortunately, that's really biting us all in the tail. And the other thing that contributes to this is that this age group grew up in the period of time of sex, drugs, rock and roll. And there's this kind of attitude out there that says, oh, let grandma have her last kick. So there's a lot of enabling that has gone on for this to have happened.
I didn't even think about that, but you're right, the psychedelic era where it was all free love and free drugs, that is in the DNA basically of people a little older than I am who lived through were in their heyday in the 60s.
Yes.
It's fascinating. They didn't start out to abuse these medications, but they were given out. And I'm not sure the doctors even understood what the ramifications would be back in the day when these were just given out so frequently. But it just happens over time that you start taking it, you feel better, and then you feel better, and then maybe you don't really have any physical pain, but the drug makes you feel better overall. Is that right?
Well, there's even an added component to that, because if you stay on narcotics for long enough, they will make you feel pain more. So
how does that work?
It's called hyperalgesia. And it sensitizes your nerves to a pain that may or may not exist. So that's why it's important for folks to only be kept on narcotic medication if it's for surgery or a very big insult that's similar to that. Apparently, it's not important how much they get, but it's for how long they get it. The longer that a person gets a narcotic, it changes the wiring in your brain so that you feel pain more, you get anxious more easily, it constipates you, and just freezing up the GI tract like that makes you feel pain more. So there's a number of different ways in which it sets you up for not wanting to get off. And then, of course, you get the dependence and the addiction part of it, where your body just craves something that gives it pleasure or relief from what it's suffering from.
So when someone visits their doctor and they say, but I'm still in pain, I need this drug, I have pain, they may not be just trying to get more medication. They may actually really be in pain because the drug has set them up.
Yes.
to have that pain continue.
Yes, and that's a very difficult thing for a physician or a provider to deal with, and they may not understand. In fact, what I found is that this effect was not well understood. It's better publicized now in the literature, but it's not well understood.
How would someone know, say age 52 and beyond, if they had an addiction to opioids? I mean, are they getting that high feeling? Are they doing that? Or do they just, when they don't take it, they know that they just don't feel right?
Yes, it's more a feeling of first of all, the mood. It is a downer. The drug in and of itself will slow you down and also keep you from producing testosterone. And I know males should prick up their ears at that, but it cuts you out of more and more of ambition, and you feel more and more like just withdrawing and sitting down or resting or not doing anything. And things pack up. Your behavior tends to change over time towards this couch potato kind of mentality. And what's difficult is that for older people, they retire, or they stop working, or they stop going out to various social arrangements for themselves, or they go to church less and less. And that's kind of a natural thing that we observe in older people. But for someone who is taking these types of drugs, it will make that more profound so people don't pick up on it.
So clearly it's an abuse of the medication. Is it the same type of abuse as someone taking way too many, getting really high, having a serious problem? Or is it an abuse of you really don't need it, you're taking a couple a day, it's not, you're not emptying bottles and breaking into homes to steal money to get pills, maybe, but you're still taking it for years.
Yes, and they have renamed it opiate use disorder because instead of an addiction, which you suggested in what you just described.
Because we think of that. We think of yes. that addict mentality addiction.
Yeah.
And is this a little different than that?
It's just that this drug is being misused. It's not being used for in the way that it should really be used and is safe to be used.
Okay, because I want seniors to, if they're taking it and they've been taking it for a long time, to realize they may have a problem with this drug, even though they don't fit that profile that we often think of.
Yes. Yes.
So what is someone to do if they're thinking, I take this drug because I do have pain, because the drug has now made them more sensitive? What do they do if they're looking at, maybe, should I get off this? Is it safe to take for long term, more long term?
Well, the first conversation should be with your primary care provider and to ask that question and say, is there some way that I can be screened or tested to see whether I am using this appropriately or not? And it is good for people to take charge of their own health and to ask these questions, because if they don't get asked, it's a concern that the provider may have overlooked in the fray of having to deal with everything in a 15-minute appointment. That may have gone by the wayside. And that is a very good question to ask. And the second question is to ask, is there something that is safer that I can take to address my pain problems?
Let's talk about that. What is safer to take to get you? During the pre-interview, you had said that you had actually gotten people off the opioids successfully.
Yes.
So how did you do that?
I worked with a primary care provider who wanted to do this, who was motivated to do this in his patients, and in a second practice, a large practice, where they were motivated to do this for their patients. And I looked, first of all, at the aging process and what goes short and sets people up for trouble. And the first thing that I deal with is sleep quality. As we get older, after age 50, we produce less melatonin and less vitamin D for ourselves. And these two things, melatonin is your natural hormone to give you a good night's sleep. And that's why people just get less and less sleep as they get older. So the first thing I do is we concentrate on a good night's sleep, how to get that. Sometimes we time their prescription medications for night, like blood pressure medication. So again, they'll get a good night's sleep together with the melatonin. And this is a huge driver for health. If you get a good night's sleep, you have a better mood in the morning, you have a better mood, your pain levels will be lower, you have better blood pressure, better cholesterol, better heart health. So there's quite a number of benefits that go with getting the good night's sleep. And it's important when you take the melatonin to avoid the morning fog, as some people complain of, is that you confront yourself in the morning with bright light, either by opening those curtains to bright sunlight in the summertime or having a bright bedside lamp and turning that on. That resets your internal clock so that your melatonin dose will work so much better at the next evening.
So if you are trying to get off opioids, how does sleeping really make that happen, to really make it easier for people to do that? We're almost out of time for this segment.
Yes. The first thing is it lowers the pain level in the first place, so you are able to get away with a lower dose.
Okay. When we come back, we will talk more about this, so stay with us. There is much more to come on opioid addiction and abuse among seniors. If you'd like to hear the show again, log on to WVOMFM.com and listen to it in podcast form. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So, Elizabeth, before the break, you were saying that the correlation of abusing opioids and sleep is pretty strong, and that if you get a good night's sleep, sleep can be a natural pain reducer. Am I getting that right?
That's correct. And it sets you up the next day with a lower pain level, and that way you can cut back on your dose. And I just wanted to add that if you are investing in a good night's sleep as a military objective for yourself, you shouldn't be napping during the day if you can avoid it, because that will interfere, unless you're really tired and you just need a 5-minute rest for your bones and then to carry on again, but not to allow yourself to drop right off during the day if you can help it.
2 or 3 hour nap in the afternoon is probably not a good idea
not
if you're looking to get a good night's sleep.
That good night's sleep, yep.
So if you need less, if you're in less pain, you need less of the medication. That's one way to start weaning off
yes.
the medication. Do you recommend someone just listening to this show and thinking, oh, I think I take too much of this, and just stopping? Or should they talk to their physician?
No, they should talk to their physician or provider and do it in a graded way, because if you go cold turkey, there's actually a mortality rate associated with that. I'm working with hometown health practice and we had an experience where we knew it was important that people not go cold turkey, so there were medications with what they call a comfort pack that help with that, but it's sometimes jarring your system like that quickly can be hard on the heart and or even on the mood and become very dark and lead to worse things. So we don't advise you just to do this sort of thing without medical supervision.
And it's important to note what I'm hearing you say is these drugs, they affect every part of your body and your brain. So once they're in there, you need to respect that and treat it really carefully to get them out.
That's right.
Okay. So if a senior is also concerned about this and they're going to try the sleep thing, but they still have pain, but they don't want to take the heavier drugs, what can they do to reduce pain? I heard that you can mix acetaminophen with ibuprofen, and one clinician told me, yep, take them together. They work on different pain centers in the brain, and it's a really good pain reliever. And another clinician later said, oh, no, that'll kill you. So, what, you know, you don't know what to believe.
Yes. And in the short term, and they have found that taking two extra strength Tylenol with 400 milligrams of ibuprofen is...
So two of the small ibuprofens. Yeah,
two of the small ibuprofens and two of the extra strength Tylenol is equivalent to one Percocet, one Vicodin, or one Tylenol number 3 for injuries to your hands or your legs or your feet or your arms.
Like arthritis.
Arthritis, even an injury. They are now doing that in many emergency departments of the country, and they're telling folks, look, you can get away with this, and in the short term, it should be fine. If you are taking ibuprofen around the clock for an extended period of time, that can be harmful to the heart. And if you are taking Tylenol again around the clock for an extended period of time, that can hurt the liver. And as people get older, that they become more and more sensitive to those adverse effects. But in the short term, if you get, and even in the weaning context, if you're wanting to wean down, taking those two in full dose while you're taking that journey down and off, that can be helpful.
Describe short term to me, because it can be all relative. To me, it might be a month. To someone else, it might be 6 months. And also long term. As a pharmacist, what would you consider short term in a time frame?
Less than a month, rate for some people, ranging to 3 months. For if you're younger, 3 months, and if you're older, 1 month.
Because drugs metabolize so differently
with
a senior.
Yes, they do metabolize.
And what is that change? So if someone was taking, if they're 50 and they're taking 4 ibuprofen, which I think is the prescription strength of ibuprofen, like an 800 milligram, how is that different for someone who's 70?
Well, an 800 milligram, and actually no one should really take 800 milligram except under a provider's supervision, because it can burn a hole in your stomach.
So always eat first, though.
Always, right? With a full glass of milk and with food. And, that's protective of the stomach. But also, ibuprofen in these kinds of doses can really adversely affect the kidney. And the kidneys produce a hormone that is protective for the blood vessels in the heart. So it should be respected. If you want to get away with not using something internal like ibuprofen, you can ask your provider to get some gel or cream that you can put on the affected area. And even then, I recommend readily using menthol if you can find the 4%, and I have found the 4% in Tractor Supply for horses, but many providers do prescribe that for their patients.
And you would put that on a sore knee or a sore back?
Yes, and it's 4% menthol is good enough to anesthetize the nerves that are hurting, give those a rest, and often when you give tired nerves a rest, it gives them a chance to heal.
Is there any time limit on that? You can take that forever, so that's
you
not
you can take that forever. That it has no adverse effects in the short or long term.
When we come back, we will talk more with Elizabeth DeGrazzi about opioid addiction and how to wean off it. So stay with us. There's lots more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. So short term, a month, maybe 3 months, depending on your age, of ibuprofen and acetaminophen, Advil, and Tylenol together is a very good pain reliever. Always with food, because it can burn a hole right through your stomach. What about drinking? I know I've heard that the Tylenol, the acetaminophen with alcohol, can be very dangerous for the liver.
Yes.
So no one's advocating that you down these with alcohol, but if taking them separately, if you have this in your system, is drinking going to be a problem?
Yes, it is, because alcohol lowers your the activity in the respiratory center, so that it will be easier to stop breathing if you have both alcohol and the narcotic in your system. And as you get older, you'll become more and more sensitive to this effect. So whatever alcohol is consumed, consume it with food so that as little as possible reaches the brain.
The best thing probably would be if you're taking the painkillers, do them earlier, and then the drinking, if you're going to have a couple of glasses of wine or something later, not too close together.
Yes, you separate them as far as possible, and don't have the two glasses. Just have one glass of wine if you're going to have a glass of wine, and have it with a full meal.
Full meal. If someone's still in pain, can they just break up those? Take Tylenol in the morning and ibuprofen in the afternoon.
Yes.
Or you're not going to have the same effect. Is it the combo that works so well?
Some people do alternate. It's good to try to see what works best for you, because sometimes, you know, a level of one will be falling and you'll be able to pick up in the middle with the other one. So it doesn't really matter. It's maybe in the beginning when you're starting off, yes, take the two together. Perhaps... And in the early part, I would advise that you take them together of your insult or pain, newly acquired pain. And then if you want to take them with every 6 hours, but at a 3 hour interval, one at 3 hours later and the other one 3 hours later, you can always try that. That does become a little difficult time-wise, though. It becomes clunky.
Do you ever... Or have you ever heard of someone who evaluates their pain? Maybe they're not really in as much pain as they think they are anymore because they've just taken these drugs for so long that it's become the new normal. So do you ever assess someone's actual real pain level? Where are you today as far as pain goes? Get them off everything and then start over, figure it out.
We usually start where they are. That is... if they come into the primary care provider's office, they will be asked, how much pain do you have right now? And then they'll usually ask, what is the worst level of pain that you get or you've had in the last couple of days or a week? And that will be reported. And then the provider can decide and judge what is appropriate for that patient. And as I say, there are a lot of overlooked factors that can go into this, and it's important, and if a person is interested in going to a pain specialist to get all of these pain factors explored and taken care of, chances are they'll be able to whittle down and probably off the opioid medication.
Do you ever hear of anyone who is really afraid to start this process because they don't want to reduce their medications because they fear that they will have extreme pain and then it will take time to get back up to the level that they're at where the pain isn't as severe?
Yes, and I think there are different feelings about that at different times of the year. If you're wanting to bite something like this off, you're probably best to bite it off the spring, summer, and fall when the weather is good. During the cold weather, when your vitamin D levels are probably lower and your mood gets affected by the lack of light, that's not a good time to tackle that.
And arthritis, I know at least personally, in the cold weather, it's much worse than when it's warm.
That's right.
So warmer weather right now would be the time to really have that pain assessed. And that's something you would do, look at someone's medications as an independent contractor, pharmacy specialist? If someone called you, they could hire you to really look at their medications?
Yes. Yes, I can do that.
And how would they do that? How would they reach you?
Just call our toll-free number, 1-877-219-6155. And we are very reasonable, and we tailor our charges to what people can afford.
That sounds like such a great service, Elizabeth. Elizabeth DeGrazzi from DeGrazzi & Company, independent contractor, pharmacy specialist, 1-877-219-6155. Might be worth a phone call to see what's going on. The ideal thing is to take no medications if you can help it. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Again, thank you, Elizabeth. Thanks for listening.